Just to make it clear to everyone, I am aware that the name of this program is Yeshiva for a Day, and not Yeshiva for a Day and a Half, or 2 days, or a week, or something like that. So I am very conscious of the fact that we are running relatively late. My particular, I guess my job at this point, or what I've been asked to do, is to kind of explain what it is that I do. I've been asked to justify what it is that I do numerous times. I'm going to try and explain to you exactly what it is, what my particular position is all about. So we say Rabbi Bendelstein is a rabbinic coordinator. He works in our office. He deals more directly in office type of managerial sides of companies. I am I am what's known as a rabbinic field representative. Rabbinic field representative is a glorified name for something known as a mashgiach. Right, we were hoping if we changed the name, maybe the salary would increase. we're still waiting for that. Generally, we are referred to as we are the eyes and the ears. Those of us rabbis out in the field, we are the eyes and the ears of the rabbis, like Rabbi Bendelstein in the office. I always say that if we are the eyes and the ears, then he is the brain and the mouth. So we're not supposed to make any decisions or think or anything like that. We're just supposed to go ahead and look. Apologies. Be that as it may, even though it's not quite proper protocol for me to disagree or in any way contradict what Rabbi Bendelstein has said, I do wish to take exception with one thing that he did say. I apologize, Rabbi Bendelstein, in advance. Rabbi Bendelstein took exception with my assertion that Adam Arishan, that Adam, got his bread from Sobeys. I can prove that, and I am about to do so. If we look at the fifth day of creation, fourth or fifth day, the Torah tells us, it says that, let there come forth, tad she haaretz desha, let there come forth from the earth grass and trees that will be bearing fruit. At the end of the day, it says, Vayihi chein, and so it should be. So be. Yeah. Now, if Adam HaRishon was getting his fruits from Sovi, I assume that once he was there, he was probably getting his bread and other staples also. Kashrus, as you can tell, is a serious business. No, truly it is. Let me just explain a little bit in a general type of way what it is that I am supposed to do or what's expected from me in my position as a mashgiach / rabbinic field representative. At any given time, I'm not sure how many hats they had on that sign for me to wear, but just sitting there taking just a quick inventory. At any given time, I am expected to be a process engineer, an organic chemist, a master of business administration, a marketing expert, a therapist, a detective, a computer engineer, an auditor, and a quality assurance person. That's just off the top of my head, the different aspects of what my job is. Now, all of them you may say, let me just go into a few parts of it to explain to you where they are important for us. One of them, also a dancer. I have to also know how to dance, which comes up a little bit later. One of the things that we mentioned is an MBA. An MBA. Now, what in the world does the rabbi who's going to a food plant need to have some understanding of business in order to be able to do this job? Well, there's a seven-letter word. I don't wish to mention it in public or mixed company, but I will be daring anyway. That word is Walmart. I don't know if anyone has ever heard of that. Walmart is a really, really interesting institution. It's big, it's huge, it's giant. I don't know if anyone here is in the food business, textile business, dry goods business, if anybody in this room does business with Walmart. I will explain to you how Walmart does business. Walmart has a place in Springdale, Arkansas. They have an entire airport which was built basically for them. I was there a couple weeks ago going to a plant in another part of Arkansas. I came through at about 5 o'clock to get my flight back, and I was recruited for a minyan for mincha in the middle of the Northwest Arkansas airport, we had more than a minion over there, because at any given time there will be at least a minion or two or three or four of Jewish people in Springdale doing business with Walmart. The way that Walmart works, as I understand it, is they have this big office. They call your company that provides for them. They call them into the office. Everybody's sitting there in the main waiting room. They send you to a smaller office. And when you get into the smaller office, you sit there. The Walmart person comes in and says, "You make cupcakes." Right? That's your business. You make cupcakes and you wish to sell them to us. Well, in your particular part of the country, rent should be this much, labor should be this much, you should be putting the following 9 raw materials in there. Your sugar should cost you this, your chocolate should cost you that. Therefore, putting out X amount of cupcakes per day, per hour, per shift, the cost of each and every cupcake should be 0.7 cents. A reasonable profit for you will be 0.2 cents. Therefore, we will give you 0.9 cents per cupcake. If you want to sell to us, fine. If not, see you later. Now, what does all that have to do with kashrus? It has everything to do with kashrus. Because you know what? There's nobody who can make money dealing with Walmart unless one of two things. Either you're doing so much business with them that because of the sheer volume that you're doing, it's going to be profitable for you. Or your business is on such shaky ground that you're willing to go and take a loss just to have product to produce so you can keep your staff on it and not make them, and try and staunch the bleeding somehow. The first scenario is really not a kashrus issue. The second scenario, that's the worst thing in the world for me. Because if you're hurting so bad financially that you have to go and lose on the product that you're making, you will try and cut your expenses any way that you possibly can. And if one of your expenses is what you have to do to make the rabbi happy, that's one of the first places you'll look to cut. Now, I only use Walmart as an example because it's really true with almost every retailer that manufacturers deal with nowadays. But see, I as a mashgiach, when I walk into a facility, if I see that label in there, the red lights have to go off. They must go off, because I need to understand, why are they getting involved with them? Is it because they're doing so much, or is it because they're hurting? And if they're hurting, then I have to be doubly vigilant. I have to make doubly sure, because you know what? They may be cutting on me, and if they're cheating on me, it's not kosher. I don't have any room for movement on that. If I don't understand how business works, I don't understand the reality of profit margins, then my hashgacha is not worth anything. Because I'm walking into a booby trap and I don't even know what I'm looking at. Unless I have a good understanding of the finances, then I really can't do a proper hashgacha at all. Certainly not on that scale. The same way, I tell you, I have to be a marketing expert. I need to be a marketing expert because I need to understand not just what my company makes, but I also need to understand what they want to do with it. Where they sell it, who possibly is going to buy it. Because if I look at the markets that they're aiming at, if I look at the people they're trying to sell to, then I can understand what's going to happen in the future. If I walk into a company and just look at what they're doing today, you know what? Everything that comes out today might be kosher. But what happens tomorrow? Who knows? Between the time I came today and the time I show up again in 2 weeks, they may have come up with a new product, a new item, a change. If all of a sudden out there in the world, all of a sudden, pork aroma has now become a really hot thing out there on the market, you know, today they're not putting it in. In the course of the next 2 weeks, before I get to visit them, everything may be imbued with pork aroma. Right? So I need to know. I need to know what the markets demand. I need to know what people want to buy, what people are looking for, where they're trying to sell their product, who they're aiming to. If I don't understand that, then I don't understand what's going on. When I walk into a facility, I need to know what I'm looking at. Looking at doesn't mean just what's there. What I'm looking at is what's going to be. I always say, you know, I have to be 5 steps ahead of every company that I go to, because they're three steps ahead of me to begin with. So whenever I structure a kosher program in the company, the goal is that I structure in such a way when I set them up that even if they will do A, B, C, D, and then for fun, E, it's still going to be kosher. Even if they mess up this way, that way, the other way, and that way, it's still going to be good. So instead of just looking at what's there, I need to look at it with some foresight. Now, how do I do that? Well, first of all, I need to be something of a process engineer. When I walk into any facility to give them hashgacha, to certify them for kosher, I need to know the following. I need to know what they are making. You would be shocked. I apologize. I don't mean to talk about other certifications, other supervisions, and this is not to speak about anyone in particular. You would be shocked at how many mashgichim there are working under the rubric of kosher supervision who don't even know what the product coming out of the facility they're supervising is. They don't even know. They have no idea. They just know they're sent there, go and look. You ask them, you know, are they making chocolate chip cookies? So, I don't know, maybe. I saw some dough over there, you know. It happens. Anybody out there can go out and hang their kosher shingle, you know, and say there are 785 different, now with the Edmund EK, now there's 786 kosher supervisions in the world. And as we've been speaking, another two were probably added. Anybody out there can go out and proclaim that they're giving kosher certification, that they're giving supervision. The question is how they do it. The question is, do they know what they're doing? There are certain basics. You must know what they make. You must know how they make it. You must know why they do it that way. You must know how else they could do it if they wanted to do it. And then you have to know what they might want to do when you're not looking. Those are the absolute basics. What they're making, if you don't know what they're making, you know what? It's malpractice. Number one. Number two, how they make what they make. You have to be a process engineer. You know, I will tell you a story. It's very, very interesting. A friend of mine told me this story. I heard it from him directly. He's a bit of a, shall we say, chevreman, as they say. You know, he's a little bit of a game player. Nice, orthodox, straight guy. He had a bakery. He had a bakery for years and years and years. Everybody bought from his bakery. They loved the bakery. No one had any problems with it. The rabbi came in, the rabbi checked, the rabbi went out. Everything was fine. Well, somehow, some way, when nobody was looking, the world got a little bit more religious. And now, all of a sudden, what used to be good for the last 20 years, now all of a sudden, it's not so good anymore. We want something better. We don't like the short beard on the rabbi that was going in. We want a long beard, right? We don't like the way that he says his brachas with his pronunciation. We want a different pronunciation. Such things happen. Ultimately, it's for the good. I mean, you have to make people happy. You have to make people happy. So they went and engaged a, I will not say who this is, but they went and engaged a, and this is not by any means to imply that anybody in a similar situation is not a quality supervision. This is one particular person. They went and engaged a Hasidic rabbi in order to certify the product. Now, in order to certify what? The bakery, the local bakery to be kosher. So the Hasidic rabbi used to come in. He would walk around. There was one serious issue with him. He meant well. He did well. He was serious. He was honest. The problem was that he could neither speak nor read English. This was a bit of a challenge. So he would come into the bakery. He would walk in. He would go with the owner. And he would tell him, I don't know how many people understand Yiddish here. Well, I'll do my best to translate. We'll translate one or two times. So he would say to him, they would look at this, they would come to a pallet, a bunch of bags of sugar. He would look at him and say, Vus is dus? What's that? So he would tell him, Zucker, sugar. So he'd say to him, Zukusher? Is it kosher? So he would tell him, Yeah. Then they would walk next. They would find these big sacks of flour. The Rebbe would turn to them and say, Vus is dus. Right, what's that? So we tell him, male, flower. Sikusher. So you tell him, ya. Good. And this is how they would go around the bakery. Now, I told you, this person that I know is a bit of a chevreman. He really is, you know, he didn't understand what was wrong with this bakery for the first 20 years that it was there, when what changed. Everybody knows everybody else in business, local business, same industry. Approximately half a mile away was a non-kosher bakery that baked with lard. He went to the non-kosher bakery. He got from him a 5-pound can of lard. When the Rebbe came in to give his certification, while he was still in the front of the store, he took the 5-pound can of lard and put it on the middle of the baking table. The Rebbe came in. They went to, "Vus is dus? Zucker, sugar. Zukusha? Ja. Vus is dus? Mehl, flour. Zukusha? Ja." He looked at them, "Vus is dus?" Told them, "Lard." "Sikusha?" "Ja." "Vus is dus?" You gotta know. Again, this is, I know who the person they're speaking about, who the Hasidic Rebbe is. He means well. He's a God-fearing man. He only wants to do the right thing. But if you can't read and you can't write, if everything's in English and everyone's talking in English, you gotta know English. Send me to China. If I don't know Chinese, what good is it? Don't send anyone. Save them money, save us money. All right? If you don't know what's going on, the same way as you don't know how a product is made, if you don't understand what it is that they do and what it is that they have to do in order to create a product, then you can't give us, what are you giving Ashkacha to? What are you certifying? That everything looked very pretty? That all the stainless steel gleamed brightly and they polish it up every night? If you don't know how they cook it, if you go into a juice company and you don't understand that every juice is cooked, you have no right to give Ashkacha. If you go into a juice company and you don't understand what happens to the water, where does that hot water come from that cooks the juice? How do they cook it? I mean, I could go into, trust me, I can speak for days. No problem. And I often do. Right? I could speak for days and explain to you all the intricacies and the ins and outs of exactly how an advanced food processing company happens. But I gotta tell you, if you don't know how they get those little M's on the M&M's, you can't give Ashkacha. Not the M&M's. Right. Now, I am not supposed to divulge the legions of captured Chinese little midgets that are writing M all day. And I'm not supposed to tell you that. I know how they do it. I know how they do it, and it's fine. It's nothing to worry about. But it's a process. If you don't know how they do it, you can't give us, what are you giving Ashkocha to? What are you certifying? You're certifying that what? You walked in and smiled? Everything looked nice? If I don't understand how an ultra-high temperature pasteurization system works, and how I understand that you can... What does water boil at? Anybody know?
212
Fahrenheit. 100°C. Where are you from? The U.S.? Water boils at 100°C, 212, right? 212 Fahrenheit. Okay. You go into the store. You see that they have shelf-stable milk. Everybody go in the store, not in the refrigerated section. They got these crazy-looking packages with the kind of plasticky thing. They put milk out there. It's not in the refrigerator. It stays on your shelf for 6 months. Everybody seen long, right, shelf-stable milk? Do you know what they pasteurize that at? You know what they cook that at? Well, for those who are interested, 286 degrees Fahrenheit for 3.8 seconds, according to the state of Pennsylvania. Federal regulations in the U.S. require it to be a little bit shorter, but they want to err a little bit, 282, not 286.3, but they allow them to, they want to err on the side of caution to make sure that they, to make sure that they have fulfilled everybody's regulations. That's how it's done. Now, let me ask you a question. How, if the stupid milk, pardon me, if the milk boils at 212, how in the world do you get it to 286 degrees? Very good. I have a food man right here. Exactly. You have to put it under pressure. Well, how do you put it under pressure? You sit there and say, boil, boil, boil. That's not the kind of pressure that we're talking about. We have to go and create a vacuum and lower the atmosphere, raise the atmospheric pressure, and therefore raise the boiling point and allow it to boil. So it's going to cook at that temperature, but it's not all going to boil out. Well, once you get it to 286 degrees and you finally cooked it at that, how in the world do you get it out? Because as soon as you get it out, it's going to explode. I don't know if anybody knows what I'm talking about. Right? You put this stuff under pressure, it boils at 212. You have it at 286 degrees. Fine. So now you've cooked it under pressure, 286 degrees. Now, we'll take away the pressure. So what's going to happen? Well, you have all this energy pent up in there. You take away pressure, boom! It's going to explode. Which is what it does, by the way. Right? However, it explodes in the controlled chamber called a flash chamber. In physics, it's a flash. Right? A flash chamber in which we lower the pressure, the energy escapes, the milk comes down, there's a tremendous amount of condensate, the water in the milk, which was injected into the milk in the first place in order to boil it up at that point, escapes and is taken out. What happens to that condensate? Just a curious question. What happens to it? The water that they put, in order to cook the milk, they inject steam into it, they put it under pressure, they raise it to 286 degrees. Now they raise it back down, they lower the pressure, bang! It goes back down, all the energy escapes, and all this liquid that they added, the steam that they added to cook it, that escapes. The milk goes on. What happens to the steam? What happens to that liquid?
They regenerate it.
Well, yeah. Huh? They actually don't regenerate it. Actually, they'll take that, they'll recover it, put it in their boiler. Or else they may, if it's a food grade type of thing, they may put it into, they can do a million things with it. It's known in the business as cow water, for those that are interested. But if you don't know how that works, so you can go into a plant, they can be making stuff, it can be trafe, you can have everything under control for your kosher things, but if you don't realize that when they flash off that condensate, they take it back and can reuse it, you're putting trafe into your kosher product. If you don't know how they do it, you don't know how it works, you cannot give hashgacha. So you must be, to do my job, a process engineer. You must also be an organic chemist. You must understand organic chemistry in order to know what it is you're looking at. You need to know, as we spoke before, that mono and diglycerides come off of the glycerol, at the end of a carboxyl, right, off of the fatty acid chain, three fatty acids and one glycerol. You need to know that once you have a glycerol molecule, regardless of whether it comes from animal or vegetable, you cannot scientifically in any lab anywhere tell the difference between the two. Need to know that. You need to know exactly what the properties. Why do I use emulsifiers. What in the world is an emulsifier? What in the world is an emulsifier? Emulsifier, water, oil, they hate each other. It's like me and Trafe doing battle with each other all the time. Cannot live together. Cannot stay together for any given amount of time. They run away from each other. You buy salad dressing, notice that it separates. No, that's not a mistake. That's the water and the oil, right, splitting off. Vinegar and the oil splitting off. Because one is heavier than the other. Well, water and oil do not like each other. When you buy a candy bar, you buy a chocolate bar, you open it up, and you see that white film on the back, you say, ooh, they use cheap stuff. It's stale. Right? This is stale chocolate. No, it's not. They just use cheap oil. They use the cheap emulsifier. The emulsifier is what's supposed to keep the water and the oil from separating. Does not combine them into one molecule, but it binds the two molecules together in order to keep them from splitting apart. So I need to know exactly what products, what industries I need to use an emulsifier in, because if I need an emulsifier, I know that most of them can be sourced either. They're either sourced kosher or non-kosher. If they're trafe, they're real trafe. But if I don't know that in order to bake a bread, you need a dough conditioner, which is going to require an emulsifier. I don't know if I need ice cream to make an ice cream. I need to be able to keep the ice cream from splitting apart and keep the air in the flash cooler in an ice cream plant. I don't need to know I need to put in my mix also that type of thing, a monodiglyceride, in order to accomplish that. If I don't know that, I don't even know what to look for. How do I know what to look for? I walk into the plant. What do you use? Oh, we use this, right? But they don't tell me. I need to know what I'm supposed to see, not what they're showing me. I need to know what I need to see, and if I don't see it, I need to know why I'm not seeing it. You know what? I gave Ashkacha to a pizza shop. Spent 3 hours in there, going through it top to bottom, looking at all the ingredients, walked out, and realized that I didn't see any cheese. This is a big problem. Right? I mean, everything, look, Ashkacha, where is the cheese? Where's the cheese? You can't have pizza without cheese. If you don't know you need cheese to make pizza, you have no right to give hashgacha. You have no right to do it. that's the chemistry side of it. You need to know again why one machine is next to the other. And if it would be cheaper, you need to understand the economics of how a plant works. Because you need to see if something you're looking at doesn't make sense. If I have a product, I'm running it over here, my oven is over here. In the bakery example, my oven is over here. If my mixers are half a mile away at the other end of the building, I need to know there's something funny going on. Because it takes time and manpower to get it from there to there. They're not going to be mixing a quarter mile away on one end of the building and then spending money to pay people and spend time and effort to send it over to the other side. It must be getting to that oven a different way. It must be going somewhere else from those mixers. I need to understand that. If I don't understand that, I don't know what I'm looking at. If I know what I'm looking at, what am I certifying? It's really very straightforward. I need to be somewhat a computer... more than computer literate, because a company can tell me anything. Oh, Rabbi, we made that on Thursday, and we only use this raw material. I find something in a company that's questionable. Say, what did it go into? What did it go into? Say, well, that went into the cookies that didn't have the kosher certification symbol on it. Say, okay, that's fine. I believe you. Thank you very much for telling me the truth. My job is not to believe them. That OU does not mean Rabbi Stone believed them, so it must be true. That OU means I verified that everything in this company is correct. And therefore, if they tell me they went into those cookies that they made last Tuesday, I'm going to go into their computer. I'm going to go into their raw materials. I'm going to do what's known as a where use and do a total search in the computer to find out exactly what products they use that raw material in. I will inventory their packaging to see whether on the day that they made, they claimed that they made it, they used that particular cookie packaging was removed from inventory. I'm going to have to make a calculation as to how much of this raw material goes into a batch, how many cookies come out per batch, how many go into packaging, and do I have a comparable deduction in the packaging that's going to justify and prove to me that they actually used it for that, or maybe they used it for something else. If I don't know how to use a computer, I'm lost. If you don't know how to do it, you can't really do it. The other things that we need to be, just to run through them, therapist, that's critical. Therapist is absolutely critical, because there's a lot of people out there with a lot of problems. And if you don't, the beard, the hat, the yarmulke, for some reason they have this assumption, like, I am the address for all of their personal issues and everything. Now, you all know me from like this morning. I don't think that you're going to bring me any personal stuff. And I wouldn't even my wife doesn't bring me my personal issues. But, there you go. There's still time. Well, it will be a cold day in Edmonton before anybody ever asks me to help them in their personal life, I assume. But it's very important, because the overwhelming majority of information that I get is not from what people tell me and what records tell me. It's what the people I deal with on a day-to-day basis in a company tell me. And there are people that will tell me things that in a million years they would never think of saying, because it would jeopardize their employment. But because we have such a good relationship, because I'm such a wonderful, sweet, charming, happy person who's helped them out of all their serious situations in life, because of that, they share. They share such things as, Rabbi, I really am not telling you this, but if you would make sure today to check on the third rack in the second row, the second shelf up in the warehouse, you might want to try and do that today, but I never said anything about it. Right? Or, you know, Rabbi, you might want to review who our upcoming possible new customers for new products are going to be, and what projects we may have in the pipeline right now. They're not really supposed to tell me this, but you know what? They share it, because I'm their friend. I don't know if they're my friend, I'm their diversion, I'm their whatever. Whatever it is I am, but we have a relationship. I once had a guy I used to go to, and it gets very scary, because it's very, very touchy. Everybody is out there in the world and deals with the overall community. You know, you have to be good with your coworkers. You want to be on good terms with them. It's very important. I had a guy that I used to work with, a company that I used to visit, and I have a pretty, I don't want to say this is being recorded, but let's just say that I have a pretty extensive knowledge of trivia, especially when it comes to things that happened in the 1960s, 70s, and early 80s, that I can draw upon. I had a fellow in a company that I used to get along with, and we used to go and have a good time, and we would talk about really obscure things and obscure references, and we were very good, and I said, you know, this is great for kashrus, and it's a wonderful thing. I went to him one day, and I said, you know, because we talk about stuff, you know, he had a houseboat. He had a houseboat that he kept on the Hudson River. And if he's listening to this, I don't mean you, Royce. He had a houseboat that he keeps on the Hudson River where he lives in upstate New York. So we're walking around with this, how's the boat, how's everything? He said, we were out there last week. He said, Rabbi, why don't you come over to the boat on Sunday? We'll toss back a few cold ones and we'll have a good time. I'm too close. I need to be his friend. We need to be good. A relationship. Buddies? Buddies we can't be. Because once we're buddies, then all of a sudden, I lose my authority. His friend, to the degree that he can confide. To the degree that he'll want to confide to me the things that I need to know. But buddies, I'm not your buddy. Still the rabbi. Still have to retain that authority. Detective, that's what it's all about. To figure out, to be able to know, go into a situation, go into a plant, go into some place, be able to look at it and not see what you're seeing, but to see what you're not seeing. It's all about not what's right, but being able to perceive what's not right. But for that, you need a lot of experience. You need a lot of experience, and you need a sense, you need an intuition, you need, and most of all, you need what we call siyata d'shmaya. I have many plants that are certain that I am in my car, right behind the truck that delivers the stuff that's no good. They're sure of that. Because I have a knack for walking in 5 minutes after they get the stuff that doesn't have the symbol on it. You know, I just walk and say, what's new? We knew you were coming. We knew it. We say, oh, look, when's Rabbi Stone going to be here? We've had this stuff for 7 minutes already and he hasn't shown up. But that's really what it was. We have a lot of siyata d'shmaya. We have a lot of help from heaven in order to do our jobs. Dancer, the most important one. I have been known to dance in factories. When we get something settled, we do the victory dance and the kosher dance. And whatever it takes to be, you know, to be able to relate to people, to have them welcome you. Our job is not to find the problem. Our job is to make sure that the problems don't happen. And whatever it's going to take me to do that, then that's what I'm going to do if that's what's necessary. But our job at the end of the day, and this is one final note that I want to leave you on, our job at the end of the day is to do the job and to do it right. Because all of Klal Yisrael, all the Jewish people, everybody who's eating kosher is relying on me and Rabbi Bendelstein. Now, I know Rabbi Bendelstein is doing it right. But you know what? I need to make sure that I myself am doing it right. And therefore, as in everyone's work, there's always the sense that, you know, you want to cut corners, you want to get home early, you know, I know what it's going to be already, so why should I bother to look? My rule, and many of my colleagues, our rule is that as soon as that thought goes through our mind, I know what that is up there anyway, so why should I bother to look? Always pull it down, because it's always messed up. No question about it. Right? Murphy's Law and the opposite, or something like that. It's to be diligent. We have to do our job diligently and to do it on the higher standards because, you know, I must tell you, it's a hard job. We are put in situations where there's some serious decisions that need to be made. I can go into a company which is doing a multi-million dollar production. In order to do that, I have to kosher the place. I walk in and it's not clean enough. In order to kosher, it's got to be completely clean. I don't like the degree to which they clean. I need to be able to stand up and in front of a multinational, international company and tell them, you know what? I'm not doing this. I've done koshering. They get the water up to 208, 209, 210, 211, 211F, and then it stops. I called it, I said, they said, Rabbi, 211. I said, I'm a 212 man, you know, give me 212 or I'm out of here. Alright? And we sat there, they call in the engineer, they put in live steam, they do this, they do that. We stood around for 45 minutes, an hour, waiting for it to hit 212, and it just 211, 211, didn't get any further until finally I figured it out. Which obviously everyone else can figure out too. Because we had like 30 people standing around trying to figure out what's wrong. I told them, I can get this done in 1 second, in 5 seconds. So now I said, everybody turn around and face the wall. Because my mother taught me, a watched pot never boiled. So we all turned around, and it got to 212, and we countered it. But you know, if you can't get it, and you can't do it, you have to be able to stand there and say, you know what, I can't do this. To do this, irresponsible. Klal Yisrael, the Jewish people, all the kosher people are relying on me. I must get it right. I need to get it right. They'll say, Rabbi, we're going to lose $150,000 if you don't do this. You have to be able to stand there and say, you know what? It's not right. I can't do it. It's not my job. And even though in your mind you say, well, maybe because of this would be all right, and maybe say that all right, and then you know, move our thumb a couple times, maybe that would make it better. You have to be able to do it and do it right and be committed to it. And the OU is committed to it too. It's like certain products. There are certain products out there which are, I must tell you, they're halachas, they're products, they're not kosher. Right? They're not kosher. We won't deal with them. There are other agencies out there that do. And you find this oftentimes, you find it in a multitude of products. You'll have a, you know, you go and you ask the rabbi, is this kosher? It has a kosher symbol on it. He says, no. He said, why not? It's a kosher symbol. Well, you know what? A lot of times, I can't tell you why. I can tell you there are people out there, kosher is big money. You can make a lot of money and become a rich rabbi. Rabbi rich? Rich rabbi. You can become a rich rabbi in kosher. It's very, very lucrative if you want it to be. Now, part of the way to do it is, if you can cut, as with every business, you cut down on your expenses, so then the more profit you make. So, if I charge a company, let's say, $100 a year, and I visit them 10 times, and it costs me $10 to visit them each time, then I make no money, because the $100 I charge them is spent in the $100 of expenses I had. I'll give you a much better, more lucrative way to certify them. I charge them $100 a year. I show up once, costing $10, pick up my $100 check, and then not show up for another year, I made $90. It's much more lucrative, but he didn't do the job. We had a plant in Arkansas. I won't say the name, it's one of Rabbi Bendelstein's plants. In this plant has 20 different production lines. It's a bakery, we had it there. This plant was under the certification of some kosher supervision agency. We took over one production line for a particular product, for a particular customer. You know exactly what I'm talking about. Right? And we sent our rabbi in. Now, Rabbi Bendelstein asked me to go down about a year later and give them a talk, a little kosher education, as it were. You know, with the whips and the chains and the water. He asked me to give him some kosher education. Which I did. I took a tour around the plant after I finished. So I told the plant manager, I said, you know, I have some ideas how to make your kosher production run easier, but I just don't want to give them to you because we don't certify this plant. We just certified one line, one production, one product of 19 different production lines. So I don't want to step on the toes of the other guy. So the plant manager tells me, he says, Rabbi, don't worry about him. I said, why not? He said, just don't worry about him. Why not? He said, you know what? You all have been certifying that one product and that one line for 18 months. About the last 18 months. Since I came to this plant 11 years ago as plant manager, the entire plant has been under this other supervision. He said, Rabbi, in the 11 years that I have been here as plant manager, that means first shift, second shift, night shift, all times, day and night, the other rabbi has shown up exactly once. However, 18 months ago, you certified that particular production line. Every time I turn around, your rabbi's in my freezer, your rabbi's in my refrigerator, rabbi's crawling in my ingredients, he's underneath the line. Every time I turn around, your rabbi's here. You guys mean it for real. The other rabbi, don't worry about him. I won't see him for another 11 years. But you guys, you tell me to do something, I'll do it because you mean it. There are different ways to do the job. You have to be real about it. You can't cut corners. And you have to be competent. In order to give kosher certification in the world today, you have to be not all-knowing, even though Rabbi Bendelstein is all-knowing, but in order to do this, you have to know so many different things, so many areas of expertise, so much training, so much time, so much experience. And unless you have that whole picture, which is what we try in the OU to give our mashgichim, we train them, we work with them, we accompany them, we instruct them in order to give them all of these insights and these abilities. Without that, you know what? You can't really do the job. But to do the job properly, Baruch Hashem, we have the resources, we have the ability, we're able to do it, and hopefully, because of that, we're able to service the people of Edmonton and all the people the Jewish people, all the kosher consumers around there with high quality, reputable, responsible kosher food.